right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. My name is Asher Brooks, and this is Horrible History with Asher Brooks. I changed the name because it's my podcast, and I can do whatever I want. All right. Joining me today are two very special guests. I have Raffi Phillips.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming back. You did a great job last time, and now we're here to talk about more murder and mayhem. And we have another wonderful guest, Mikkel Phillips, as well. Introduce yourself.
I'm Mikkel Phillips. I work in cars.
Mikkel Phillips or Mikkel Phillips?
Phillips.
Phillips. I was just making sure I got your last name right. You say you work on cars?
Yes.
Fantastic. And you got a great story that you're going to be sharing with us as well a little bit later. Not this episode, but next episode. I think we're going to talk about some car-related stuff. It's just great to have you guys back. I know it doesn't sound like much to you guys, but it's been a while since we recorded an episode, so I'm just excited to do this again. So before we get started, we haven't decided who's going to go first yet, so we're just going to roll for it to see who goes first, because we're big Dungeons & Dragons nerds. So I will go on evens, and you will go on odds.
Yeah.
That sound like a plan? Okay, so here we go. That is a 9, which is an even number?
9 is an odd number.
Odd number, so it means you're going to go first. There's a reason I talk for a living.
9 is an even number.
Because I am real bad at math. So what have you brought for us today, Raffi?
I have brought the colonization of German East Africa.
That's a pretty broad topic. What drew you to the colonization of German East Africa?
I was doing some reading on Paul von Lettow-Vorbeck, who is an interesting character who led a guerrilla war in the region during World War I,
mm-hmm.
and was the only German troop not to surrender until the end of the war.
So what, he went like Rambo in the woods?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. So so how does this story begin?
Well, it all starts with this guy, Dr. Carl Peters. He was a philosopher and a renowned writer and wrote a lot about, African archaeology. But he was also quite the character,
mm-hmm.
being classified as half mad, and according to Bismarck, he was the stupid guy, or the idiot.
So he was a doctor that Otto von Bismarck said, this guy is stupid and bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's a mad scientist.
Essentially.
Great.
But there's also this really funny picture of him,
mm-hmm.
where it's just a outrageously large gun in comparison to him, and it's just his entire height, and it's hilarious.
What's his name? I'm gonna Google his picture.
Dr.
Carl Peters. Auckland? No, Auckland is Carl Peters. Where is this picture? I'm gonna keep looking for it, but keep talking.
Okay, so yeah, Bismarck was a very influential figure in early German Empire history. So to have the second most powerful person in Germany call you a stupid guy is not great for...
It's not something you put on your resume.
Yeah, but he was still a renowned writer, right? And was still very published.
What was he a doctor of?
Philosophy, I can only imagine.
Okay, so he's not a doctor.
Yeah, he's definitely not a doctor.
Definitely not a doctor. Fantastic. So how does he get involved in East Germany? In Africa.
So he was raised in Hanover, and mm-hmm. when he was, still fairly young, he would move to London for the majority of his life. But being raised in Hanover gave him a lot of inferiority to the British, because, his empire didn't have colonies, because Bismarck adamantly did not want anything to do with colonies. He saw them as just a net loss for any intervention, right? Mm-hmm. But, Carl Peters, or I'm just going to call him Peters.
Yeah, for Peters. Peters. Yeah. Dr. Peters.
So, Peters, he didn't have that. He felt so inferior to everyone he was talking to because he was kind of an elite, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, he did not have that. So, he would eventually get all caught up with, this group that was just going to go out and get some colonies for Germany.
So just an independent group of explorers that Germany should have some colonies. Let's go find some land
Yeah.
And just give it to Germany.
Yes.
Okay. That's very patriotic.
It is.
I think. Keeping in mind that, you know, colonization is bad and did bad things.
It's debatably nationalistic later.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's like, it starts on like a, oh, we're going to get all this land for our country. And then at a point it switches.
It's like, oh, we have all this land. Maybe this land was just for us.
So before it was colonized, then, like, as they set out, it was just a bunch of Arabs, Swahilis, and Portuguese people all fighting each other in fortified cities and all selling immense amount of slaves.
Okay, so it's like, there's no large controlling force here. It's just a bunch of individual cities with, like, majority populations of one ethnic group or another that are kind of fighting each other.
Yeah, while all selling immense amount of slaves and making it, it's like that's the only part of its economy. It's just slaves.
Yeah, they fight each other, they capture each other's soldiers, those soldiers are sold as slaves.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they also are right next to a big trading hub through, like, the waterway between Madagascar and Africa.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you.
So they can travel down, you know, maybe kidnap some people, right?
Sell them. Okay, yeah. So they're slavers. Bad people.
Yeah. But, so the game plan for how, you know, Peters is going to get this is they're going to go down. They're going to, you know, just throw up the German flag and then say, want to join?
So, I mean, does he have, like, 10 guys with him? Hundreds of guys?
Well, yeah, it's this entire organization who's trying to do this.
Okay, do you know the name of, like, the organization? Were they, like, a Knights Templar or something? Or
it was, like,
people who'd love to have a colony and are vaguely German?
Yeah, it's, like, the German, you know, organized. Yeah, it wasn't very official. It was
just a group of dudes.
Yeah, who want, you know, this colony.
Okay, all
right. So, you know, their entire game plan when they got down there, right? We're just going to go down there. Germany, flag, join.
How does that go for them? Profit. First, we get to Africa.
Yeah.
Second, German flag. Third step, profit.
Yeah, except the second they got there, you know, not even there. They got to an island off of there. That was like a British-owned island that was letting them stay there. They were like, we're going to do this, right? Once they got there. And then, you know, Bismarck and the rest of the world was like, what?
What are you doing?
What? And Bismarck specifically said, you cannot use the German flag or anything affiliated with it. Which, he probably knew this was happening. But still, it's not a good sign.
So they kind of get to this island and are like, all right, guys, we're here at the island. We're setting up preparations to, like, launch to the mainland. And in this time, Bismarck gets wind of, like, hey, there's a bunch of dudes waving the German flag going to conquer some part of Africa. He's like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You can go do whatever you want, but you can't use my flag when you do it.
Yeah.
Okay, do they, like, build a new... Please tell me they're, like, hand-stitching a new flag.
No. Here's what they do. Nothing. They don't care.
They don't care.
So So what they do for the next few years is they just go around, they find a leader, right? And then, like, you know, show them all this cool stuff, like khaki, whatever. And then they get them drunk. And then they have them sign a piece of paper. And then, boom, technically part of their control.
So they just trick some, like, some local tribal leader. They, like, get him drunk and they're like, hey, put your mark on this piece of paper. And he just, like, signs over control of some swath of land to them.
His swath of land. And then they go around this, like, truly absurdly large area. Like, there's not even really a state to compare it to. It's just big.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, that is the thing about Africa, is that, like, all the maps that we have, especially the United States, are like, yeah, Africa's this big, United States is, like, roughly the same-ish size, which is incredibly wrong. Africa is massive. It's probably the biggest continent by far.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's just a bunch of land that they own. Are they just walking around setting up, like, schnitzel shops and things?
No, they have no control over any of this. They just have the papers. They throw up the flags. get him drunk, and that's about it. That's their entire plan.
Okay.
Yeah, so they go, you know, they spend years, a bunch of them die because of disease.
Okay.
And then, here's where it gets absolutely unnationalistic, because they go back, and Peter's like, hey, we got all this land for you. Want it?
Would you like it?
And then Bismarck said, no, absolutely not.
I want nothing to do with this land you stole from someone.
Not even someone, just dozens of people. They just fooled into joining this.
Yeah.
And then, so here's what Peters does. He's like, ah, I did not almost die just to be denied. So he was like, hey, he went to Belgium, who had gained control of the Congo.
Yeah.
Which is a even larger and more absurdly large piece of land.
Oh, absolutely.
And so Peters went to Leopold II and said, I'll give you, you know.
Germany didn't want it. How do you feel about making a deal?
Yeah. So then when Bismarck heard about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had gotten blackmailed. So either he gives up this big amount of territory, right? Yeah. While the country is already kind of screaming that they want colonies, mm-hmm. right? Or he submits to Peter's demands and has to take on this inevitable burden on Germany.
So he's in a bad situation. So either a huge like enemy of Germany, Belgium, right, gets all this land that was supposed to be claimed for Germany and Peter makes a big stink about it.
Not exactly a huge enemy. However, not
a competitor.
Not good to give a lot of land to a neighboring country for very little reason.
Oh, yeah. So it's basically, I get it. So what does Bismarck do? Well, I mean, what does Peters want, really? Like
colony. He just wants a colony.
He just wants
Germany.
Does he want to be the governor of the colony, or he just wants Germany to have a colony?
He would become the governor.
Okay.
But he just wanted a colony, really.
Yeah, and then I suppose once it becomes an actual German colony, then soldiers start showing up and they start enforcing Peter's land rights, in air quotes.
Yeah, which is, again, why Bismarck did not want this. So, here's where it gets sad.
Mm-hmm.
So, Peter's, not a good guy.
Yeah.
He's... So he becomes, you know, the head, right?
Becomes the governor, Bismarck gives
him. Yeah. So, how do I put this? He would get rid of slavery successfully, right? Which, you know, was really against what a lot of the people there wanted, because their entire business was slavery.
Yeah, it was their economy. So he abolishes slavery?
Yes.
He's like, slavery is illegal in my new colony.
Before starting feudalism of Germans, where Germans became a ruling class over everyone else.
So he's like, slavery is abolished. Also, you're all serfs now.
Yes.
Congratulations. You're not technically slaves anymore. Yeah. We don't do slavery here. We do a different, very similar thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he would start something that would later be classified as Komboku rule.
Mm.
And a Komboku is a whip made out of the hide of a hippo. And if used properly, is meant to cut from, like, neck to base of spine. Yeah.
That sounds awful.
A historian at the time classified it as less an instrument of punishment or discipline, but of terrorism.
God.
Yeah, and so Peters would, while this is all going on, Peters was actively fighting multiple rebellions, which makes sense.
Oh, yeah, because all these people had been kind of doing whatever they wanted, and with German flags kind of hanging around, and they're like, no, we're not really German. This is some guy, he hangs out, he has no power, and then suddenly this guy shows up with a bunch of German soldiers at his back, and is like, no, you are my serfs now. And to enforce that, I brought my mega death whip made from hippo. Ugh.
Yeah. So, with all the rebellions, he really showed his bad side once he became ruler, being immediately corrupted by all the power, because he would murder, burn, hang, just insane acts of violence without, like, real direction. Like, his favorite concubine, he caught them having an affair with someone, so he burned down their entire village and the other person's entire village that they had an affair with.
Okay. All right, well, you know, it seems like he might be a little insecure about his bedroom facilities. You know, if your wife cheats on you and you burn down not only her family's village, but everyone else's villages too.
Yeah, so in all this, right, you know, there's a bunch of rebellions, but they're all kind of separate and not really coordinated at all.
Yeah, yeah, they need coordinated leadership because he's got a lot more resources and they don't have it.
But a major rebellion was started called the Machi Machi Rebellion.
Machi Machi Rebellion.
And, you know, this was a big rebellion, right? Like, you know, tens of thousands of people, right? But they kind of made a mistake.
Yeah?
They got really wrapped up in the idea that this potion called the Machi could basically make them invulnerable. Okay. Cure all disease. They would basically become
undefeated, untouchable, invincible.
Yeah. And so when they got into this battle with the Germans, right?
Yeah.
They would quickly learn that that was not the case.
So the best hope for this whole group of tribal groups and resistances, the best hope, the biggest rebellion, is convinced that if they drink enough special Mountain Dew.
Not even enough, just a vial. Just a vial.
If we all drink a little special Mountain Dew, we'll be invincible. Yes. They've got guns, bullets, who cares? Was this like a recent discovery that they had made, or was just like something they had believed culturally for years?
It's something very powerful. Like, I'm pretty sure this one tribe had done for a while, but it had never been this mainstream.
So a bunch of people just like tried Red Bull for the first time, and then it was like they were like, oh, it will give us wings. Let's go fight the German army.
Yeah, so when they ran into the Germans, you know, they... When the first few went down and then they drank their stuff, I cannot describe the amount of fear that they all experienced.
So, did they get routed or just slaughtered?
Oh, immediately they routed. They were gone really fast.
Just like the first wave gets shot, everyone drinks their potion. The second wave gets shot. They're like, okay, it doesn't work. All right, back up, let's go home.
They would take heavy casualties and then they would just become... You know, what most other rebellions were. They were just going around burning stuff.
They would just go, yeah, you know, they would never stand up.
Yeah, they lost all prominence. But here's where it gets good again.
Yeah, now that the potion drinkers are gone, what happens?
So Germany hears about what's happening. And they're like, okay, this is unacceptable. And it ties in perfectly with the new liberal government being elected in, largely on the basis of the atrocities that were happening, which would be a, you know, which would be like the first time that, you know, European politics were altered by a colony.
Okay, so it's actually making waves in Germany. People are getting letters and, like, there's newspapers about, yeah, this man Peters, this mad scientist down there, is just wantonly murdering people. And it's, like, making the German government look bad.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So is Marx still in charge at this point?
No. He was never in charge. He's just the chancellor.
Oh, okay.
The Kaiser has been leading this entire time, but he's kind of been, you know, he's the Kaiser, not... He's
pretty hands-off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he only cares about military and then European politics.
I gotcha.
Probably didn't really care about the, you know...
There's some people dying in Congo. Yeah. Okay, people die down there. It's what happens.
But, so, this new guy, Dr. Dernburg.
Okay.
He would be the greatest leader that this country would ever have. He fixed the feudal problem, giving a lot of land redistribution, and, you know, trying to equal out the races, right?
Okay.
Of the Germans and then the locals. And then he did a lot with education.
Okay.
With making it like, you know, when the Americans would show up in like the 30s, mm-hmm. they would say, like, a lot of the schools and stuff that were built by him
mm-hmm.
during like his reign would still be, you know, there and would still, like, Tanzania, which is what it would later become, still has a fairly good education system and far above the surrounding nations.
Because of the infrastructure that he laid yeah. down. So he replaces Peters.
Yes.
Okay, what happens to Peters? Is he just quietly shuffled off to a mansion where he can burn down more concubines?
Yeah, he shuffled off and then imprisoned.
Oh, good. Hey, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. A round of applause that this man is imprisoned. Very good.
Yeah. But, well, yeah, because I think he would go on to kill a guy after being released. Like, he would have that cushy life with a nice little title.
Mm-hmm.
And then commits more crimes. And then gets put in jail.
Well, you know, that's a lesson to be learned. If you get a cushy title and a life, you can't continue to murder people.
Yeah.
You will lose your nice mansion out in the woods somewhere.
And then, yeah, and then Germany had the colony. Until the end of World War One.
Until the like, end of World War One.
At best, 20 years later, after this guy was deposed.
So, great.
Yeah.
What an absolute cluster truck for Germany. Jeez. So Peter's, I love the idea that a man can be so determined that he's like, no, I'm going to create a colony all for myself.
Yeah.
And then eventually, just through sheer determination and the willingness to get people drunk and force them to sign pieces of paper, will it into existence. And then it's gone, what, 40 years after he makes it? 20 years after he makes it a true colony, it's just gone yeah. again. Golly. So it's Tanzania now, right?
Yeah.
And so when it stops being the control of, like, when the Germans stop controlling it, does it go straight to being Tanzania? Or
no,
like,
it goes straight to Britain.
Oh, Britain takes control over yeah. it and it starts getting parceled up as well.
Yeah.
Golly. We did some terrible, well, not we. Europe did some terrible things in Africa.
Yes.
Truly, truly.
Leopold II, I will mention, was far worse.
Who's Leopold II?
He was the leader of Belgium that...
Oh, they controlled the Congo.
Yeah.
Okay. So, maybe on the margin, maybe on the numbers, maybe a little bit better than Germany had control of it.
Yeah, because at least Germany fixed her act up fairly quickly.
Okay.
Not right. lasting scars that would last until the modern day.
Wait, so how long was Peters in charge? Like...
Only a few years, really.
But, like, less than 5 years?
Yeah, perhaps.
That's pretty bad.
It is.
That's less than, like, that's less than a president.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm in control of this colony. I'm going to murder a bunch of people. Yeah, I'm not in control of the colony anymore. Well, I'm glad he got murdered. I mean, I'm glad he got executed or imprisoned.
He got imprisoned, and then I think he died fairly soon after.
Well, a prison's not great, especially if you go straight from a very nice mansion to prison. It's going to be difficult for you. Well, very good, very good. Anything else about the colony you'd like to share?
That's about it.
Well, I think we will move on to the next story, where we are also talking about Germany, but Germany's the very bad guy in this story. Moving on to World War II. Have you ever heard of a guy called Bazooka Charlie?
I have not.
You've not heard of Bazooka Charlie. So, Bazooka Charlie is a very cool story. So, World War II, obviously, there's a lot of stories that came out of World War II, because it's one of the biggest stories. Have you ever heard of Bazooka Charlie, Michael?
No.
So, Bazooka Charlie was this lieutenant colonel. He was eventually a lieutenant colonel. He starts off pretty low up, but he was an officer. He was a pilot during World War II, so he gets drafted. Before this, he was, like, a history teacher. So, he's just some dude. He's, like, known to be very, like, mild-mannered. Very calm guy. He teaches history. He's very cool. Then the war happens. He immediately signs up and gets drafted as an officer because he's well-educated. And then he becomes a pilot. So his dream is to become a fighter pilot, right? Because that's the most glamorous thing you can be. He's mm-hmm. flying as an American pilot. He wants to be a fighter. But he doesn't get assigned to fighter duties. He gets assigned to be a spotter, which is somebody... So back in World War II, aircraft was used for a number of different things. But fighters had to be really, really bulky because guns are very heavy. And so a lot of the planes that they would use were these little planes. So he had a plane that he learned how to fly called a grasshopper. So it's like a Piper Cub Grasshopper class. And so it's very, very light. It's basically like just a big steel frame and then a fabric kind of stretched over it. So it's very, very light. And so he would teach people how to fly this for about 2 years of the war. And then he was sent out to be an artillery spotter. So he would fly over battlefields and then he would land and then be like, okay, there's things at this position, this position, this position, start shelling. And then he would go back up and he'd be like, okay, things are working. So he does this for quite a while. And he starts to get really, really upset because he wants to be a fighter pilot. He wants to be a fire pilot really, really bad. And so all he does all day is fly over German tanks and soldiers, and they don't even fire at him, right? Because they're trying to be as stealthy as possible. So you see this little, you know, aircraft coming through. And if they shoot at him, one, they're not going to hit him. He's far too high up. And two, it'll give away their position. So they don't fire at him. They just ignore him. And he's getting so frustrated with this. So he's doing this all the time, and then he gets a call that he's being reassigned as an artillery liaison, right? So he joins up with an American tank unit. No, excuse me. He joins up with a tank unit. I can't remember if it's patrol of the Americans or the British, but they are traveling to try and reinforce this infantry unit. They're doing, like, some scouting, but they know there's an infantry unit up ahead. So they come up, and he is walking along. He doesn't have his plane. He's just walking along with them, like, giving them advice on, like, artillery positions and stuff. And they see that there is a village up ahead, and there is a infantry squad that is trapped there. It's probably, it's a large group. It's enough that it would be a real loss if they were to die. But they're being encircled by this German, like, tank battle group. And so it's very, the problem is that they're not supposed to engage. They've been told, you are here to scout. Right? If you see something, you radio back in. You tell us, we will come fix it for you. But this, they're basically just a column of like five tanks. There's not enough infantry support. And if you drive tanks into a village and you don't have any infantry support, people can swarm out of buildings and like jump on top of your tank. And then you're very vulnerable in a tank. Like tanks by themselves are not that dangerous. Yep. It's just the combination of all the forces that make them a real nasty like piece of weaponry. So the tank commander realizes that if they engage, they might get swarmed and get killed. Their orders are not to engage. Their orders are just to scout. But if they don't engage, all these infantrymen are like trapped inside this village, and they will die. And so this tank commander is trying to figure out what he wants to do. And this guy Carpenter goes, no. He jumps up on a tank. Again, he has no rank here. He's not even he's attached to the unit, but that he's not in the chain of command. He grabs a 50 caliber gun on the top of this machine gun and goes, let's go! And just orders a charge. And so all these tanks behind him are like, oh, I guess we're going. And so they charge into the town, and this spooks the Nazis so much that there's this guy just going, bah, 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 just at the top of this tank. And so the way tanks work is there's one guy driving, there's usually a guy up there spotting and shooting. And so he's in the lead tank, and they keep rushing these corners, because corners are big in tank warfare, because if you come around a corner and you get blindsided from the side with a trap, with like a hit, it's bad, because a lot of tanks are very well armored up front. They're pretty good armored on the sides. Their tops and their backs are pretty poorly defended, right? Because if you put too much armor on, they're just too heavy to move.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So every time they turn a corner, Carpenter just goes, fire! So they just come around a corner, they just blind fire. And so they keep coming around corners, and like, Nazi, bam, just gone. They come around a corner, Nazi, blam, gone. They do this for about 6 or 7 corners, and they're just obliterating Nazis. They go so hard, and the 7th corner, they come around, and Carpenter goes, fire! They shoot, they hit an American tank that was defending, and they knock the bulldozer blade off of it. Now, the Germans have scattered at this point. Nazis are running, because this man has just charged in. But he literally sits on top of this thing, just blasting tanks away until he hits this American bulldozer tank. It doesn't kill anybody, but it snaps the bulldozer blade off the tank. And then he goes, I should probably chill out. I think we might have won. I think I'm getting a little excited. And so, like, the day is saved. Everything is good. And as, like, the rubble is settling, 2 military policemen march up to Carpenter, and they're like, that was great. Good job. You're under arrest. Come with us. You are not in the chain of command. You absolutely shouldn't have ordered a charge. You don't have the ability to do that. And so he gets court-martialed He is set to be executed. He's set to be executed. And then General Patton goes, no, pardon. He's pardoned. And in fact, not only is he pardoned, I'm giving him the Silver Star for bravery. I will now take him under my battalion. He will be working for me exclusively. Right? So he gets promoted. So he's gone from being just a pilot to an artillery liaison. Now he's a major. Because he's been promoted. He's got the Silver Star for bravery. So he starts working for General Patton and starts going back to doing these spotter things. So as he's doing this, he's now got this confidence. He's like, I'm pretty cool. I can do whatever I want. And so...
Oh, no.
So he's fighting during the siege of a place called Lorient. And he gets frustrated with his inability to kind of affect the battlefield. Like, he's seeing, once again, there are these tanks advancing, there's these armored personnel carriers. He can see the Germans marching, and he's just flying around, and they're ignoring him. He can't do anything about it. And so, at this point, he hears a rumor that these other pilots have started strapping bazookas to the sides of their aircraft and firing them, and he's like, I want to do that. So, the way most fighter aircraft work, right, is that they either fire directly in front of them, or they drop ordnance from below, mm-hmm. right? There are very few airplanes that actually strafe the ground, if that makes sense. Like, the idea, like, often in movies, you'll see, like, planes flying over it, and then bullets, like, clapping into the ground. That's not a very effective way to fight. It's not an effective way to fight, right? If you're going to be shooting in front of you, you should be shooting at targets that you can actually hit. So he's trying to do something that's very, very difficult, right? To actually aim his plane at the... To actually hit anything, he has to aim his plane pretty much straight down to fire. So he goes back to the airfield. He straps two bazookas. This is his first test. He straps two bazookas to either side of his wings. And then he rigs up in a little electrical control switch. And so he just starts flying around and buzzing. And again, they just ignore him. And he sees two or three tanks. Leading a column of armored personnel carriers. And he's like, it's time. So he goes into a little spiral above them. And as he picks out his first target, he's like, I'm going to go for the one at the very front. So he spins around and then just goes into a straight dive towards the very first thing. Now, any other pilot that would have tried this would have died because the planes are so heavy and advance so quickly. You go into a spiral like that. To accurately hit, he has to get within 100 yards of his target. Oh. So he is... Can you imagine? Like, all right, getting closer and closer to the ground. So he's within 100 yards of his target, and the people in the tanks are like, what is happening? Like, why is this unarmored plane, like... And it's a tiny little plane, yeah. Right? You're looking at, like, an Wilbur and Orville Wright kind of style plane. Mm-hmm. It's a little plane. We couldn't even carry a radio. It was that light. And so they're like, what's happening? And then suddenly... two bazookas shoot out the top and slam into this tank at the front of the column. And so the thing is that tanks are very, very well protected in the front. Like, the Panzer tanks or the Tiger tanks were actually really well feared. Like, Sherman tanks would shoot shells at them and they would bounce off the front armor, right? That was so, it was over 4 to 5 inches thick worth of armor. But the tops of tanks are almost entirely undefended, right? They can stop bullets, but not actual rocket-propelled grenades. And so he punches two bazookas through the top of this tank. They hit the inside, and then they explode. And they ruin this tank. Absolutely wreck it. And these Germans are like, what just happened? And so they don't know what to do. They don't have any guns that point up. They don't have to carry anti-aircraft weapons with them. So they just take their rifles and their machine pistols and just start firing at him. And so he... like, turns around, goes back, refuels. He's like, I'm gonna need 4 more bazookas, boys. And starts, he just absolutely, just jury rigs 4 more onto his thing. That's and starts too just many. Absolutely wrecking planes and tanks. I have some quotes from him. So, after destroying his 5th enemy tank, he has a quote. Word must be getting around to watch out for Cubs with bazookas on them. Every time I show up now, they shoot at me with everything they have. They never used to shoot at Cubs. Bazookas must be bothering them. And so he does this over and over again. He does this so much. He's doing this multiple days, multiple times. His plane gets a nickname called Rosie the Rocketeer. so they name his plane Rosie the Rocketeer. Now, there's... a lot of cool stories about him. So he continues to do this. He destroys armored personnel carriers. He destroys all sorts of tanks. And the thing is, like, they get wise to what's happening, right? They're now returning fire. This is over months and months of warfare. He's taking out these tanks. And so they get wise to what's happening. And so every time they see his plane, because it's painted with its own particular little brand of colors, they fire at him. And they're shooting rifles and machine pistols. But the way his plane is set up, like I said, it's just a steel frame with fabric, right? The only thing that would actually take the plane out is if you hit the engine, the pilot, or the fuel tank, right? And those are a tight, narrow line, right? So he would fly down into hail of bullets, boom, 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 bazookas, taking out infantrymen, taking out tanks and stuff, pull back up into the sky, pulling heavy Gs because he has to go into a steep dive and then come right back out on top of the people he just shot. He flies back to the airfield and there's just bullet holes everywhere in this plane. And he's like, all right, let's go get some more canvas. And then just sew the fabric closed. He's like, all right, let's take her back up. So one of his most famous exploits is there's this big counterattack against the 4th Armored Battalion, which he's a part of. The German counterattack has been pushing through beleaguered American defenses and is getting closer and closer to the actual battlefield headquarters. So if they destroy the headquarters, then they will be absolutely wrecked. The whole thing will have to retreat. The whole thing will have to rout. And so the people are trying to pull out. They're doing like a fighting pull out. But you can't. It's hard to evacuate a base when you're being shelled.
Mm-hmm.
So he's flying up and there's this fog all over. And he's just, his trigger finger is itchy. You know what I mean? But he can't see anything in the fog. And so he buzzes for like 3 hours waiting for this fog to end. And the moment the fog kind of starts to dissipate, he's like, I see you. There's my boys. There's some tanks coming along to reinforce. And he's like, you're my dudes. He flies down, boom, 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 takes out 2 or 3 tanks in a row. So as the tanks get shot, the first one gets hit, and they start to break formation, right? So tanks start slipping into trees. I mean, at the speed that tanks will slip at, which is like 2 miles an hour. So they're scattering, and they're, you know, getting out of formation. He unleashes all 6 of his bazookas. He turns around. He flies back to base, refuels, reloads. Gets back up into the sky. As he gets back up into the sky, he sees the same column of tanks. They've just moved the destroyed tank out of the way. They've moved maybe 500 yards down the road. He's like, hi, guys. Boom, 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 boom. They scatter again. He goes back. He refuels. He refuels and reloads 3 times that day. And each time he does, he goes back and attacks the same column until they retreat. They're just like, we're done. We're done. We can't.
We're tired.
We're so tired.
We're sick of this guy.
So tired of this. Another thing he does, and this, so a lot of the stuff that we have about him is recorded in like patriotic newspapers. Like I have a quote from like the Stars and Stripes, and this quote is from like the Journal World. So he apparently, after destroying a bunch of tanks, he sees that there's a bunch of like soldiers kind of encamped in a field, like Nazi soldiers encamped in a field. So he lands probably about a mile away from them, finds this German rifle, and goes and single-handedly captures all of them by himself and like forces them to tie each other up, and then goes, great, somebody will be along to collect you, and then leaves and gets back in his plane and goes, just flies away. He does all these things. He never really has a bad day. He eventually is discharged before the end of the war. He's honorably discharged because he gets sick. He has something called Hodgkin's disease. And so the doctors are like, I hate to tell you this, man, but you got about maybe 2 years to live. It's not looking great for you. And he's like, okay, well, all right, I guess I'll go back to being a history teacher. And goes back to the United States, becomes a history teacher. He gets given a Hodgkin's diagnosis in 1945, I believe. Goes back to being a history teacher, and then just quietly lives for another 15 to 17 years. He dies in 1966, happily and quietly in his sleep. Can you imagine being like, so they call him Bazooka Carly, they call him the Mad Major. He's this incredible dude, and then he immediately goes back, takes the same job as a history teacher, and proceeds to teach history, which he is a part of. Refuses to, doesn't ever talk about it. He's just like, yeah, it was good. So I have some quotes from him, which is absolutely fantastic. So he says, some people think I'm nuts. End quote. Some people think I'm nuts. He has another quote that says, I think if we're going to fight a war, we should be fighting at 60 minutes an hour, 24 hours a day. And, like, just the kind of guy, he's like, yeah, I like to teach history, but if you want me to shoot people, I'm going to do it. I'm going to shoot the heck out of those people until it's time to be done, and then I go back to being a history teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very cool guy. So his plane actually lives on. So his plane got left over there. It was way too expensive to ship all these planes back, yeah. Right? So Rosie the Rocketeer, with all of her glory, gets, like, pressure washed. The paint comes off of it. Everything comes off of it. The bazooka's clearly taken off. And it gets sold to this German, like, flying club, right? So these Germans are, like, these, like, you know, aristocratic Germans or whoever's got the money to learn how to fly are now flying the same plane that was used to absolutely wreck Nazi tanks. And so eventually it gets found. There is this aviation museum, I think in Kentucky. Don't quote me on that. We are recording, but don't quote me on that, listeners. There's an aviation museum that found where Rosie the Rocketeer is, purchased it, and brought it over to the United States. We put into its aviation museum. And it is currently being, it was in 2017, it was repurchased by the aviation museum. It is currently being repainted into the Rosie the Rocketeer colors by his granddaughter.
Oh.
Which is really, really sweet. She's like, she knows all this history about him, and so she's repainting the plane, and so it's going to become a part of, like the aviation museum, which is very, very cool. But I just love the idea of a man who was like, I am sick of flying over people who don't even shoot back at me. I am going to strap 6 bazookas onto my airplane, and I am going to dive bomb people. I will say a lot of people tried to do what he did, but could not fly the planes well enough and kept crashing them. And so, it did not become a fighting strategy.
Yeah.
But it did absolutely scare the crap out of every German unit that would see a spotter plane flying overhead, because they were just like, is it the dude? Is it the guy? Everybody take cover. Okay, it's just a regular guy. It's just a regular pilot. All right, everybody.
Is it the crazy up. Guy?
Is no, it the crazy guy? Fine. No, we're it's fine. Fine. He's fine. No. He's a very, very cool guy. He's a very, very cool guy. But yeah. He destroyed a lot of people and then went on to quietly live a life of humble history teaching. And I think he's a really cool guy. Really cool guy. Oh, goodness gracious. I've had a lot of fun. Well, Germans played a lot of roles in history.
They
sometimes
did.
They were bad and sometimes they were just kind of bad. Well, this has been a lovely episode, so this is where we're going to end the episode for today. If you've enjoyed yourself, folks, please continue to listen to some of the episodes that we put out. If you really like it, you can follow our Facebook page, you can, you know, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever else it is that you listen. That means you'll know as soon as another episode comes out. I'll try and produce as many of these as I can, or at least as many times as I can find something interesting to talk about. If you're up in Door County and you want to see me personally, because who wouldn't, you can go to Door County Trolley or attend one of the monthly comedy nights that I host up here with Door County Fire Company. Thank you so much for listening. And again, special thanks to Raffy Phillips for coming and bringing a story with us. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much, Mickle, for coming and sitting with us. I'm really excited to hear your story in the next episode that we do, but you'll have to wait about a week to listen to that one, ladies and gentlemen. So gird yourselves. It'll be coming soon. Is it okay if I tell people to gird themselves?
I don't know what that means.
All right. Well, as long as they don't Google it, it'll be fine. I hope you've had a great day, ladies and gentlemen. And once again, thank you so much for listening. Y'all be safe and goodbye.